Hey, everybody. Time for another Living Faith Kenya Mission podcast. Today, you're going to hear from Morgan. Morgan is a 16-year-old girl who, well, let's face it, she's pretty much part of my family. She spent a lot of time with us. We've spent a lot of time with them. She's practically helping raise some of our kids. I mean, it's just kind of a whole thing at this point. But this is our second time to Kenya, believe it or not. The first time and the second time were as different as they could be. Two very different trips by design, not just by accident. That's just kind of the way these trips are, a little bit different by design every time. But one of the things that I really appreciate about her interview is just how pure it is and how clean it is, just her gut reaction. And then trying to bring that back to the U.S. and talking to teenagers like herself in high school and trying to share her experience with them and trying to help them understand the world as well as she does now, having been in some pretty serious places. So, pretty cool interview. Hope you enjoy it. Look for a couple more throughout the week, and we'll see you soon. Here is Morgan Halifax.
If it's just like that today, I was like, well, I went to Africa.
Let me tell you a little bit about my experience.
And so then I told them about how it's still like that today. And then we went on a little bit, and then we were talking about how we've been trying to, like, you know, if you can prove you're Native American, you can go to college mm-hmm. for free. So we were talking about how, like, making it up to them. Like, well, are we making it up to them, or are we just trying to make us not look so bad anymore? So then we were explaining, I explained to them about how, when we got on to talking about other, like, catastrophes in the world and how we try to help and stuff like that. And then I don't know where it went after that, but I kind of explained the whole toxic charity about how it's not always, it was awesome.
It's like right on right now with Hurricane Harvey, right?
Oh yeah.
So this is when I went down to, I like look backwards through the echoes of toxic charity and stuff mm-hmm. to when we were in Michigan doing work, there was lots of times where I'd run across, you know, these huge, these bundles of clothing that they were literally, you know, those, cardboard crushing machines mm-hmm. and they turn them into like those bales or they bind them up and then ship them away. They were just taking clothes and mushing them down, binding them up and sending them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but all of these clothes, like don't you need clothes? And they're like, well, we needed to close the first like month. Mm-hmm. And then no, we didn't. And then like people kept sending clothes. So it was like, there you go.
Yeah.
There's a perfect example of not helping in a useful way.
That's what I explained. I was like, well, it wasn't that like we shouldn't help people. I was just explaining it as in like sometimes it's not always giving is what is that's the help that's needed always. I was explaining that, you know, just like sometimes sending money isn't the answer. And I'm like, what's sending? I mean, I don't know. I don't really get how I feel about the dogs and all about that. How they're like, we got to save the dogs. And I'm like,
do we?
What are you going to do? How? Like, give them money to do what?
You just put a bullet in them. Okay, that's probably not the best way to save a dog.
So
yeah, that's probably not what to do. But yeah, how you feel and how you think you need to help somebody oftentimes is really different from what they actually need.
Well, and I explain that to them. And then, well, they're kind of like, well, what is it doing for them anymore? Like, because eventually the generations are going to make it so no one's going to get free college because you have to be at least 1/16th Native American. Right. And though, like, you can, it's eventually going to grow out of it and stuff like that. And they're like, when to a point is it just not even paying it back? It's just,
Yeah, that's another really complicated situation, right? Like the in Kakuma, that's a complicated situation because how do you solve that?
You can't, because it's like if you solve then you're offending the Turkana, and it's just a battle.
All of those native people in Turkana from Kenya, if the refugee camp goes away, I mean that's their only local economy. Mm-hmm. That's where all of their trade is. Mm-hmm. You know, you pull the UN out, and then you sink all of these refugees, and they go back to their countries, and Kenya loses a huge mm-hmm. source of, I mean, mm-hmm. all of the Kenyans that are employed by the UN.
Well, and of course the Turkana don't really understand that. They're just like, we're suffering just as bad as them, so why is anyone helping us?
Right. And then you've got all that tension between refugees and mm-hmm. the locals. And
yeah.
It's so complicated.
It's so complicated. Ugh. There's like no right way to attack it. It's just like...
Yeah.
Jesus, man. Jesus. Y'all just need Jesus.
Right? And like the standard American answer is like two levels into thinking about it is, whatever, just tell me who to make the check out to.
Exactly. Well, and I told that to my class. I was like, money isn't always the answer. It's not just going to fix things, especially not when it's complicated.
It usually makes things worse.
Yeah.
Adding money to problems generally means you've got, you know, the same problem and now money problems. Yeah. That's rough.
Rough.
So 16 years old and you went to Kenya on a mission trip and you went, the first time was like warm up.
Yeah.
The second trip was the real
like throw you
deal.
In head first.
Yeah.
Craziness.
Serious stuff. So yeah. What were you, like, you were nervous going.
Oh yeah. Well, so my main focus usually is just getting myself. So once I'm on the plane, it's like no going back. It's fine. So you just kind of focus on getting yourself there. And the whole like second flight thing kind of freaked me out just because you made it sound like we were going to die.
Well, we could have,
but so, yeah, I mean, I was nervous. I'm young. Not that I'm not respected as a guest there, but you always talk about how the culture is respecting older people.
Yeah, the older they are, the more important.
You know, you're nervous
you
about that and you're nervous about, oh, am I going to mess up? Am I going to offend them? And can I really bring Jesus? I'm 16. Can I really tell them? I just, you know.
Who am I?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And then you did a terrible job.
Totally.
You were awesome on this trip.
I think I like told my Jesus once. And you're like, you're shaking. Why are your hands shaking?
No, you were awesome.
Thank you.
You really were. I mean, just so, I mean, 90% of the story is these Americans came here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, you're only nervous about 10%. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, if, like, on your SAT, if you got 90% of the questions given to you, you only had to get 10 more percent to get 100%.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal. It's a little sweat. So, yeah, I mean, I heard it 100 times of these people came and then there was a pause. And these young teenage girls came to see us. You know, it's like, holy cow. It's kind of crazy.
I thought they would freak out more at the fact that a pastor had come to see them than they would a bunch of 16-year-old girls.
Yeah, well, they just assume it's my job.
That's true.
You know, like, you're a pastor. You have to go. But you didn't have to go.
No, I don't know. I don't really know why I felt. Well, because we started talking about it and like confirmation and stuff like that. And so when I went last year, I was just like, I should just go, you know,
mm-hmm.
And not really that something was telling me I had to go. It was just the feeling was like, yeah, that's right. So I went and I was like, well, I went once, I'm fulfilled, you know? And then this next time came around and I knew it was going to be different, like a lot different. And I knew that if I didn't want to withhold anyone else from going. So if I wasn't able to go, I was going to be fine with stepping back. But we finally like worked it out after like 3 months of panic and stress.
Right.
Like, that was stressful. And then we got it to work out. And I don't know. It just feels right.
Oh, it's totally right.
Yeah. I'm ready to go back. Seriously.
Dude, it snapped into focus. I mean, it was, like you said, there was some stress about funding and mm-hmm. all that stuff. And then, boy, did it snap into focus nicely. And gosh, it was such a cool trip.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been right without you. It really wouldn't have been. It was fun. It was fun to watch you and Delaney at times handling things better than grown-ups. That's pretty awesome. I mean, not all the time. I'm not saying like you guys were more grown up than everybody else, but there were moments.
There were moments. Oh, yeah. I was with Felice this last night at Meals for the Heartland.
Oh, yeah.
And we're just talking. We're like, let's just go back now. Like right now, our entire group, let's just go.
Yeah.
I don't care about school. I don't care about work. Let's go.
That was one of the coolest things watching you and Felistas, who's from Nairobi.
Yeah.
Like so she's in. She gets all of the culture, but she's been here for a long time, and she has kind of a Western sort of mindset flavor to her, like a little bit. And so, I mean, I would guess you guys have similar interests. I mean,
yeah.
That's just, I love the way she dresses.
Oh,
I love her
fashion
style.
She's so pretty.
Oh.
She's gorgeous.
It's cool to see.
She's just so pretty.
Yeah. And it's like, there's sort of that, you know, guys are both, I mean, she's 22, 23. I mean, no, she's older than that.
No, she's older. She's 24.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that's, y'all are in the same relative ballpark of age, and watching those two cultures come together inside the team was really cool to see.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. So what was your biggest fear, do you think? I mean, while you were there, not like the fear of going.
Well, I don't know. Safety is always a factor. I mean, for me especially. Because my dad,
you're just a little girl.
My dad freaked me out about bot flies. That was not cool.
That was pretty funny.
He's like, you're going to get a bot fly. He said that for like 3 weeks leading up. Well, I don't know. Just because, well, you talk to all these people and you hear about all these stories about like girls getting assaulted and beaten and stuff like that. And well, it's semi-relevant here. Like it happens. It's a thing. Mm-hmm. Like experiences, whatever. So, I mean, that's always something that makes me nervous. But I mean, I don't know. The whole like talking about Jesus was kind of freaky.
Yeah.
Just because you're like, oh gosh, like I don't know what to say. Cause you guys have all the, like you guys are good at it cause you do it so much, but so you just have stories that click automatically and I'm sitting there and I'm like, what am I going to tell? Like, do I have to tell a story or how do I connect it to me, to them? Cause I'm so different, but yet so the same. And
yeah,
so that was always freaky, like trying to figure out what story I wanted to tell or how I wanted to tell them.
Yeah.
So that was pretty scary.
Yeah. But you did a good job. You know, it's, and you're probably under the most pressure and stress, I think, that your demographic of young, high school, all of that sort of stuff, that's the hardest time to talk about your faith, yeah, in my opinion.
It is.
Which is so really backwards, because like you're still young in your faith walk, you know, you're still experiencing stuff.
And yeah,
that's when it's hardest. Because once you're older, I mean, you progressively care less and less what people think about you.
That is true.
So, yeah, that was kind of freaky, but... You know, everybody did a nice job talking about Jesus, so goal accomplished, right?
Yeah, completely.
So while you were there, what thing sort of stands out? What person or story or?
I don't know. So when we went on the last trip, it was for the orphanage, you know? So I was like, oh, we're going to be around kids. We're going to get to spend so much time with kids. And, you know, we got a little interaction with the orphanage kids, but... We were so busy being business people and figuring out and planning. And so we didn't get as much interaction with the kids as I had expected. And then coming to the refugee camp, just seeing so many kids was insane. Like, I mean, not that I didn't expect to see kids, but didn't expect to be that quantity with that much passion and excitement. And just it's kind of crazy how even like the 6, 7, 8 year olds are taking care of their 2-month-old babies, and like they're carrying them around, and it's just so different from here. Well, I mean, and I kind of understand of it since I take care of my sister kind of like that almost, but it's insane.
It's similar, but on a way higher level.
Yeah.
It's like you take care of your sister, but you're not necessarily responsible for feeding her, like taking her to school and like just the, jeez.
Yeah.
Super duper. Yeah, that was cool.
The kids were cute there.
Oh, aren't they adorable?
They're so cute. That one little girl, she sat in my lap for like 2 hours. And Joni's like, weren't you scared she was going to pee on you? And I was like, not really. Like,
how would you even notice at that point? We're so honest, sweaty. You're like, oh, whatever.
It's so disgusting. It wouldn't even matter. It's fine.
A little bit of pee didn't hurt anybody. Yeah, diapers are not exactly in high quantity.
That was
there.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the stories were just unbelievable.
Crazy.
Yeah.
We had talked a little bit about how crazy the stories had been before we went, but you know, it's different when you experience it like face to face.
Yeah. You know. I was talking to Anne about it and saying, you know, it's, you reach, because she read books. I mean, it's Anne, right? So she probably downloaded a bunch of books, went to a bunch of sites, did all the research, all the stuff. And like you get this good picture and you hear it, you know, when you've read it, but then when you hear the voice in first person saying, this happened to me, it like goes from black and white to color TV and you go, whoa, that is a whole different experience.
Well, especially since, you know, we had just met them like a couple hours. Like when I tell someone my problems, I don't just come out and say them. Like I have the people I tell my problems to have known my entire life, like since I was 5, and so these people are like, wow, these white people came and I can just tell them. And it's crazy to think that you can build that relationship so strong with someone halfway, well, across the world. It's crazy.
Yeah, why is that? Why is it that we get so close to people so fast?
It's crazy. I think it's God. I think he just like...
That's always your answer. That's always my answer. Yeah.
No, it's weird though. It's so weird. Because here, I mean, you don't just walk up to someone on the sidewalk and say, I'm having a problem. Can you help me? Like, you don't do that.
Yeah. And here were some strangers who just walked up and they were like, let me tell you about the things that we struggle with and mm-hmm. let's pray together and mm-hmm. worship together. And you're like, whoa. Intense. Yeah. That was some of my favorite parts is when you hear and you talk and then like it seemed like such a natural, like it had to happen. Like we had to start singing and worship.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just, you could not do it.
Yeah.
This is obviously what happens next.
Yeah.
Go. I love that. Some of my favorite times are when we're singing, when the drums start going.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, now it's time. Time to worship.
Well, I think it's just awesome how we'd leave for lunch, we'd come back, and they'd be in their church clothes, even though it's Tuesday. And
right. And they would change. It'd be so cool. We'd leave for lunch, and they would, you know, they would all presumably also have either lunch or something to do. And, yeah. You know, and but then they would get dressed and changed and come back and,
mm-hmm.
and they would wait for us. That was the coolest thing too, is when we'd pull up someplace and there were people waiting like,
yeah.
We've been waiting here for you.
Well, and it's even crazier, some of the women saying, you know, when we're not occupying our home, they come out and the Turkana come in and they take our resources, they take our food and stuff like that. So them being there, sitting there waiting for us, they're like opening up their homes for people to come in and take their food. It's yeah. crazy that they're willing to give that up just to come and sit and talk to us.
Yeah. That was cool. That was especially that Ethiopian people that we visited towards the end there
mm-hmm.
when they were talking about, because they didn't have mud huts. They had those, what are they, paper? Like, yeah. I don't know what their houses are made of, but all you have to do is walk up with a knife and
yeah.
slice through and step inside their house.
It's crazy.
And so you imagine, and that was a big thing for going to church.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go to church and come back and people's houses were broken into.
Yeah.
And just imagine that's a thing now that's officially, if that were here, every time you come to church on Sunday, good chance that people are going to break into your home. And they keep coming.
It's crazy.
Whew. Unreal. So yeah, what was the hardest thing you encountered while you were there? Anything that like troubled your heart or... Specific
well,
stories.
Yeah. I think, well, so the first day we were there when we were talking about the stories, that was one of the days that I really got to like sit down and listen to them because other days I was out with kids and stuff like that. So that was our first like encounter with their stories and what they had to say. And when you start hearing some of the hard stuff, like they, like cannibalism, like that's a thing. I did not know that. Like, you hear about it like, oh, some psycho, yeah.
Right.
But, and so you hear some of that stuff and like, it's just so frustrating that you can't do anything for them or anything about it in that sense of making it stop. And so that's like extremely overwhelming and you're not sad, you're just frustrated. And so you break down and you cry because then you can't do anything about it. Yeah. And it's upsetting because it's like, I feel like I should be doing something to make this terrible thing stop. And the fact that the women just sit there and, well, I don't know if my husband's alive or where he's at. And, well, it's sad because, you know, if I lost my dad in a war or lost my husband in the war, I'd be a mess. Like, I don't know what I would do with myself or my kids. That's terrible. Like, being a single mom is hard enough in America. Imagine how it is over there. Like, it's just ridiculous. So they're just there by themselves or the kids, some of the Muslims who had come over, mm-hmm. the, like, 17-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
No parents, no siblings, and...
They just walked.
Yeah.
They just heard that there was a refugee camp, and they started walking that direction until they got there.
That's crazy.
I mean, that's, you know, kids your age, just walking through the desert, walking through that wasteland.
It's insane how you go a plane flight away, and it's, like, completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Nairobi and Murang'a are so pretty and lush and green, and they grow so much stuff, and the farms go for miles. And then you take a flight and drive a little bit, and you're like, this is insane.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
I feel so bad, because when I went to Murang'a, I'm like, no, like, Africa isn't dry. It's beautiful and it's green. And, and then this time I'm like, no, those are what the pictures look like.
I take it back.
That is true.
Yeah, it's a wasteland.
It's terrible.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
It's because usually, you know, you read about history and the Bible and the land provides and...
Like, except when it doesn't.
Except for when it doesn't. There. It provides absolutely nothing.
Yeah, and it wasn't even like a drought. You know,
just how it is there.
That's just the way it is.
It's insane.
Yeah, and how weird was it that it rains only a handful of times every year?
And it rained while we were there.
Constant, like a lot. Not a lot. But
like a lot for there.
Every day almost.
That was crazy.
It was really weird.
It was weird.
Yeah, people are like, you should come back more. I don't think we can take credit for that.
Well, we're over here saying, oh, please let it rain. It'll be colder. And then the mud just stuck to our boots. And we were like, well, that was counterintuitive. Never mind. Do not rain.
It just got messy is all. Yeah, because there's nothing that'll grow in that place.
No. Jeez. I don't remember if you were at the house with us, but one of the girls, I don't know how old she was, but she had a boy with him. I think it was her brother, and his name was Mark, and he was 17. I was watching his video earlier today, but she had flowers. She used some of her water that they got from the drinking well to plant flowers, and they were like beautiful, healthy flowers.
Yeah, I think I was there. I think I got a couple of pictures.
That one,
of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, that was cool too.
That was awesome.
In this wasteland, all of a sudden, this little splash of color. Cool.
And it was awesome because we asked Mark if we could pray for him for anything, and he said no. But when Char was praying, she said something about him, said his name or something. And so I looked up when she said his name, and he was like, he wasn't like upset that he prayed for her, but he was like thankful.
Yeah.
So he denied it up front. But I mean, I always watch that. I always watch human interaction just because you like to see how people respond to each other. And it was just interesting for him to say, no, please don't pray for me. And then when she spoke of him, he was like very happy that she did.
Yeah, and sometimes there's in that culture a bit of deflection of, no, I'm not worth praying for, and oh no, there's more important people with greater needs, and then you include them anyways, and that goes a long ways. Yeah, what was the best thing, the best part of the trip?
Oh gosh, I think I don't know. Probably towards the end of the week when we were in Kakuma. When everyone just finally accepted the fact that it was hot and we were disgusting and we all smelled and we ran out of water and we all just kind of like looked at each other and we're like, well, what can we do? I mean, the last day we went to talk to these people and it was an exceptionally hot day. And we only had like a half day because we had to get back to wherever we're at, St. Teresa's.
Mm-hmm.
And we all just spent the last couple hours there. And we just kind of like look back on what you had done that entire week and you're like, I can't believe I did that. Like, I don't know.
Sense of accomplishment.
Yeah.
Like I survived it. I did it.
And not to, again, you say taking that like selfishness, not trying to be that either, but I don't know. Just looking back on it and all the conversations we had and knowing all the people we helped, knowing that they at least have more faith now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And just the energy that it provides and, mm-hmm. you know, the just sustaining a church, you know, just sort of that mm-hmm. excitement of yeah. people came, they arrived, and yeah, this is the place that Americans visited, and just that shot of energy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what I like about that sort of a trip is that it's sustainable when you leave because you know that it resonates for a long time.
Yeah. Well, and it's even crazy to leave and know there's people who are different color than I am, don't speak a language, don't understand me, but still believe in the same thing as I do.
Yeah.
Like it's just insane to think that.
Yeah, because it's like the faith is actually truly universal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it you say that in America, but it's still kind of like, oh, yeah. Yes, there's different skin colors and there's different subcultures in the U.S., but we're all kind of American.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's, but they go someplace where the world is different and everything mm-hmm. is, I mean, that culture is 180 degrees different from us.
Mm-hmm.
And faith works there too. And the cross still works there. And resurrection still works there. Like, you get to the core of humanity and you start to go, we're kind of the same, aren't we?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I always got paranoid that they were, I was like, what if they're translating not what we're saying?
Yeah.
Like,
right?
What if they're just, but then when we were at the church service and you could like feel the pulse of the Lord's Prayer and the Creed. It's like, that's just crazy.
That is another cool thing. That is a solid argument for those chunks of faith, whether it's liturgy or, like you said, Lord's Prayer, Apostles' Creed, that we hold on, that cross culture, that, and mm-hmm. it specifically comes from Scripture.
Yeah.
You know, those bits and pieces that we're all, I mean, you get that same cadence, you know, right where we're at,
mm-hmm.
and it just feels like this magical crossing borders and crossing cultures, and
mm-hmm.
we are the same.
It's crazy.
I love it. Man, I love this trip. It was good.
It was really good.
How's it been like trying to integrate back into the world now?
Well, so when I got back, I only took like one day off of work. So I forced myself to get right. Because last year, I gave myself like 2 months to get back into sleeping. It was just terrible. But so I mean, I didn't really give myself that much time to digest what had just happened. Like I just went right back into my everyday life. And so I finally got the chance to read your last devotional like a week ago or something. Uh-huh. And it's so true. It's so frustrating to explain to other people and to get them so as excited as you are. It's hard because they just don't understand. Like, because it's so frustrating. Like, you can't do it. No one else is just as excited to talk about it as me. And someone says something and I'm like, I try to respond with a joke or something that was with our group. And I'm like, oh, they don't get it.
It doesn't work.
It's frustrating because I just want to tell everybody and I want everybody to understand, but no one understands the culture or the difference. And it's just so frustrating.
Yeah.
I've been a little harsh on Sophia. Like, stop complaining. Like, you have nothing to complain about. Stop it. You're fine.
Right.
Like, I came back and I think I had seen her the next day and I just kind of snapped at her a couple of times. I was like, I'm sorry. There's people in Africa who just don't have anything compared that we have. And yeah. And now every once in a while, I'll just watch videos or look at pictures. And sometimes I cry because I want to go back. And
don't you feel like you could live there? Like it goes from unreasonable before you go there.
Mm-hmm.
And like, You what you know in your head, but you get there and you experience it and you go, I could do this.
Anyone could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally reasonable.
Yeah, it's not.
Because it's a fulfilled and satisfied life.
It is, yeah.
And so much, I mean, we have so much more here and so many more people are unsatisfied and unfulfilled.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that's the ridiculous part in my, but yeah, that's consistently people say reentry is one of the most, if not the hardest part of all of this is, because mm-hmm. I was, in my head, I have these little images where mm-hmm. I just grab somebody by the head and crack their head open.
Right?
You pull their, from their ears, you just rip their head open, and then you take your experience and you stuff it in their head and you close their head back up.
I just
and you go,
want them to know and understand.
And you can't do it.
No, you can't. And you can't just work that stuff into, like I was lucky today in class to be able to work that in, but you can't just work that into a conversation. Hey, people in Africa,
yeah.
They make other people eat each other. That's a thing, just so you know. Like, you can't just put that in a conversation.
Right.
It does not work like that.
Awkward transition to this time I was in a refugee camp in Kenya. I learned an important life lesson I think you should know. It's a recipe for not having friends anymore. Yeah, true story. But yeah, you so what happens is that you see the story goes, as soon as it goes second person, it breaks.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, reading in a book is useful, but getting it first person. So
yeah.
Then you're telling a story and it's second person, which is better than a book, but it's still not first person.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta go.
Yeah.
It's so hard to explain to people. Well, tell me about it. Help me understand.
I can't. It's just so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying to still get over that barrier of people who still don't understand the whole, what you build, what you bring to them,
right.
what you do. I'm like, well, I talk to people.
Yeah. And you can just tell they feel let down.
Yeah.
They want to hear a glorious story of, well, we built a hospital, trained doctors, and then we did brain surgery.
Yeah.
No. I mean, but again, there's mm-hmm. there's a real unsustainable, like just a mess of a, you go try and help and build mm-hmm. something, and how do you know what they need?
Yeah.
And how do you sustain that?
Yeah.
So one of the first times I went, somebody once said, Africa is full of white man's good intentions. There's just empty buildings. Mm-hmm. I remember we drove past that one spot and there's a sign outside that said occupational therapy. I'm like, oh, look, Joni. And I was like, yeah, look how empty that building is. And mm-hmm. how surely somebody from America was like, I can do occupational therapy here and it'll...
Yeah.
Yeah, not sustainable.
Yeah, so I was talking to someone and he was like, one day I want to go to Africa to build something. And I was like, you do that, man. You do that. Right. I just was like, yeah. Good.
Yeah. Deal. Because you also don't want to take a dump on people.
Exactly.
You're like, you know,
exactly.
Crush your dreams and you're a moron.
Yeah.
I've gotten to the point where I will carry a copy of Toxic Charity around with me and be like, you should do that. This book is good. Read this book. Like, let the book crush your dreams. And that's why I don't have to. Yeah. But it is. It's hard to get back into this world and like try and assimilate back in and the things you learn and experience. And
yeah.
But like, how has it changed you, do you think?
You know, I definitely think it's made me more strong in my faith, you know, more like behind it. You know, I was like, well, I'm a teenager. I believe in Jesus and, you know, but being able to tell other people and know that other people listen and understand, it backs your faith for you,
yeah.
Which helps. Because, you know, I always struggled with I'm going to die. What's going to happen after I die? I don't want to die. I don't know what heaven's like. I want to have a full life and I want to do this. And I want my dog to be in heaven. What are you even talking about? So you freak out about that and... You know, and then you have just so many more things that just make it more real and more comfortable. And so, I think I've changed more inside my head than I've changed outwardly. Because
yes.
I don't want to freak people out and scream at everyone every time they complain about something or say their life is so hard. And
but changing in your head, I mean, so it's like it gives you like this perspective where now you can navigate the world so mm-hmm. much more.
Yeah.
I always come back to the word efficiently, but there is like the nonsense doesn't get to you as much.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Problems aren't as big anymore. Yeah. And now you can deal with things that are more important and mm-hmm. you just get a more efficient and like you actually start to see, yeah, faith can sustain you in this horrible environment. So can faith sustain me if I don't get that perfect job or if I don't? Yeah.
No.
I have some people you should talk to. They're about 7,000 miles away.
Well, it's so crazy because, you know, I obviously have my struggles here with, you know, whatnot. And so it's just so hard because, you know, problems here in America, they are real. You know, we all struggle with stuff. It's real. You can't just throw that out and be like, well, I went to Africa and they're starving. And so none of my problems are real because they are real here. They're relevant. So that was really hard for me. Really hard. I'm over there and I'm like, I'm complaining that my mom's in prison. Why am I complaining? Like I shouldn't be complaining. And then I come back here and the problem is still relevant and it's still happening and there's still stuff to deal with. So it's hard to just, cause it's not comparable. You just can't, there's right. no way.
Right.
And so I feel bad that I don't want to just like throw that thought away and be like, no, I still got to take care of my problems. But at the same time, I don't want to be like, well, my life is so hard. And it's just, well, and it also, it's also frustrating because a lot of people are like, well, you're just like every other teenager. And I don't want to be cocky and be like, but I'm not, I'm telling you, I'm not, that's just not who I am. I don't, my phone, throw it away. I don't need it. I mean, I have it on me for my sister, my dad, calls from my mom, stuff like that. And I don't know. It's just, it's so frustrating. It's uncomparable. That's what's the frustrating part is it's just not comparable.
But you're legit not like every other teenager. This is not a small, like we didn't run over to Omaha to do
no,
a mission trip.
No.
Like legit, you went through something mm-hmm. that changes you and everybody does. I mean, you'll have a moment, you'll have a dozen more of these,
mm-hmm.
but maybe never one as big as this.
Yeah.
And at 16, to have that under your belt and an experience in your toolbox to be like, mm-hmm. yeah, I've had a life-changing experience. I've seen the hardest of humanity. That's the hardest of humanity.
Yeah, totally.
I mean,
they would be happy to be a homeless person here.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
They'd be like, whoa.
Right.
This exists.
And it really, so I have to always caution myself so I don't seem, you call it cocky, I call it callous, you know, where you see a homeless person mm-hmm. and now you've got different perspective and you yeah. go, I realize this is hard to be mm-hmm. a homeless person in America.
Yeah.
But I also know what humanity sustains and, mm-hmm. and what humanity goes through, can go through, is forced to go through, and this isn't the worst thing.
Mm-hmm.
So where before that, before I went to Kenya, I would have looked at a homeless person and thought, that's the worst thing that can ever happen to a person.
Mm-hmm.
Not by a mile.
No, not, not even close.
So yeah, but there is that sense of you got to deal with people who, because like I said, externally, mm-hmm. you're a 16-year-old girl, you go to high school, mm-hmm. you do football manager.
Like going to movies. I'm kidding. I hate movies.
But inside you. Mm-hmm. So this thing is going to, it's another important thing to just keep in mind is that this thing goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. This trip it's not over. Like you're going to be unpacking this for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And then the implications of what happened is the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, 70, 80 years ahead of you of Morgan being a different person.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love. That's why this trip is, to me, such a huge investment in Living Faith. I mean, this place is now peppered with people who are forever different people.
Mm-hmm.
And they act different. They talk different. We do church different.
Yeah.
It's cool. I attribute a lot of the culture of the church, I always call it the secret sauce of Living Faith, comes from people who are just different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just different. And it's frustrating.
It is frustrating.
Well, that's all right.
We have the sauce, man.
We got it's here.
I don't know why, but like 2 weeks ago in church, I was just sitting there and I just wanted to cry. I was like, we have the sauce, man. Like, why is this so real? This is terrible. I just like lied to myself.
Yeah. That's great. I get so lit up on Sunday mornings. I'm just stoked mm-hmm. and in the mood and in the place. I'm just like dialed in. This is what, man.
Like when we called when we were in Africa, I don't know why, but that, I don't know why. This sounds so bad. I wasn't even that excited to call my dad.
Yeah, I know.
I just was like, I mean, not that I didn't want to talk to him and tell him how I was doing. I just was like, when we called the church and I don't know, it just felt so right and so good. And it's crazy.
That was a cool moment.
That was insane. Right after, because you declined a call, so they have that relief of, oh, we still have our pastor, it's fine. And then, well, they're from Africa, and they want to talk to us. Like, they're in Africa. Like, we could talk to them. They can tell us how it's going. And
it was so spontaneous, because I didn't plan that. Somebody was like,
we were talking. Hey, because you were sitting over there listening to your music, and, you know, tapping, doing your green offering and whatever. And we're all FaceTime. We're like, maybe we should FaceTime the church. They're in church right now. We need to do this. And we made it happen. Even though we couldn't see them, they couldn't see us. We made it happen in like 10 minutes.
That was really cool.
It was crazy. That wasn't meant to happen.
Oh, and there was like, so I had this sense of like feeling my heart like time warp, like it sucked in the building. And I knew at that moment what it felt like in the sanctuary at Living Faith on a Sunday morning. I knew what that was.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is so cool. Like, I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, it's
crazy.
That is that whole concept of this church that exists that doesn't end at our walls, that it goes out across mm-hmm. the whole globe. And when I say that on a Sunday, I go, at this very moment, there are Christians across the globe gathering. Like, for Easter Sunday, that's always mm-hmm. my thing, is Easter Sunday, the whole Christian planet comes together and we're all inside of a building doing this thing and we're all doing it together.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that was a moment where I was like, ah, we're doing it right now.
I know, it was crazy.
That was a great memory.
That was amazing.
You're the first one to bring that up in the interviews.
I don't know why. Moment. It was awesome.
Yeah. That was really fun. Yeah. So there's people right now who are like, man, I don't think I can go.
No, seriously. Like, okay, this trip was difficult. Like, not gonna lie. I came back, I was talking to one of my good friends. He's an adult. He's like 30s, whatever. I was like, it was hard. Like, it was a difficult trip. And he's like, well, what do you mean by difficult? And I was like, okay, well, the accommodations were not as...
Subpar.
I mean, it was amazing for the area, but we had mm-hmm. geckos in our shower and the water ran out. I mean, and it was hot, but I just feel so bad when people are like, no, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. And I know it's such a comfort thing. Totally understand. To the fullest extent possible. Totally understand. When Luke made me talk, I thought I was going to punch him. I was like, I'm either going to throw up or I'm going to punch him. And it's just going to happen. But I think everyone should at least just think about it. And not listen to themselves saying, I can't do it. But right. listening to what God's telling you and what feels right in your gut. Not what your head's telling you to do.
Critical distinction, right? Because mm-hmm. your brain can think of a yeah. thousand reasons not to go. And
exactly.
But like when you got that gut pull, like, yeah. oh, it feels like a thing I should do.
And I'm the person to ask if it's like head against gut every day, every day. And, you know, it kind of comes to a point where the head subsides and it's just what's right and it's what's meant to happen. And, you know, so what if you don't go for 5 more years? So what if you want to go this year, you know?
Yeah.
I think everyone should just at least think about it and pray about it. And it's not a one-day decision.
It's definitely not.
Yeah, no, it takes time and thought and it takes a lot of work. I mean, I had to take a lot of time off work and I had to make things work. I had to make things work back here for me to be able to go. I mean, I'm a 16-year-old and I'm already like, I need to take off work and I need to make sure I don't have to watch these people or watch these people. And I have to, and so I was fortunate that you were one of my bosses. And so we were yeah. able to make that work, but
so that worked out nicely.
but yeah, it's not something that people just aren't able to do.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
That's the thing is I always say the hardest part is all the hard stuff is done when you get on the plane.
Oh, 100%. I'm such an overpacker. I overthink it. You know, I packed like 5 or 6 skirts and I think I used 2. Like once you get on the plane, there's no turning back and it's fine.
Yeah.
You just like, I'm an anxiety ridden person and you get on a plane and it's like, well.
Yeah. The trip starts happening to you.
Yeah. It's just like the whole time thing. Like, oh, we were supposed to leave at 9. It's 12:30. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, there's nowhere else to be.
No, it's chill.
It just happens to you. You all the plans in the world. And yeah, I've gotten to the point where I packed to go to Africa the night before.
You got it right, man. I should have done that. Gosh.
Because it's really like, what do you need? I'm at the point where even, you know, well, it's always good to have snacks on hand. But yeah, but I could go a couple of days without eating.
Yeah.
You can.
Yeah.
You don't want to, but whatever. Trip happens to you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the biggest thing is getting your, like, just getting to that point where you say, all right, I'm going to go and eat all of the work there. Mm-hmm. The easiest part is being there and just experiencing it. That just happens.
Yeah. Well, I think I had told you guys this when we were preparing to go on our second trip, but for the first trip, we were leaving right after school gets out. And so, you know, I'm pretty much packed up because I wasn't working 2 years ago and I'm driving to school the last day of school. I'm in my truck and I'm driving down the road and Sophie's sitting there and I was like, oh gosh. And I pulled over and I threw up and I started crying and I cried the entire day. And I wasn't even in Africa yet. I had not even experienced anything yet. It was like the biggest freak out I think I'd ever had about doing anything. And no, it was fine.
Yeah, you freak out yeah. here, but there, I mean,
yeah,
and you threw up on the plane this time too.
Okay, yeah, that. I'm so glad I made it to the bathroom. That was motion sickness related. So yeah,
that was not anxiety.
No,
that was.
Well, and I didn't even have my dad on this trip too. Like that was another big thing for me. Is I'm like, my one legal guardian that I have is
me.
You. I was gonna say, I'm pretty sure Keith took better care of my legal guardian.
I knew you were there.
Well, I mean, yeah, I wasn't you dying.
I wasn't
dying. It's fine.
Yeah, you had a pulse. That's kind of like what's where my responsibilities end. Keep yeah. you alive. But yeah, like all of the anxieties on this side when you're there.
Just they go away.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You just watch everybody in the team just kind of fill and I mean, you go through. Mm-hmm. Everybody has that moment of, oh, I cannot get my head around this, and it's.
That
conflict.
That was me at the hotel.
Yeah.
When I wasn't scared or frustrated. I was just so tired. And I was like, I've been traveling for 3 days and now we're fighting about a mom and a daughter staying in the same room. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I was just, it wasn't scared or anything. It just, you know, like you can't wrap your head around it and you don't understand why there's conflict. And then it just all happened and it was fine. And
that was a weird thing. So like this hotel had this weird rule about two people can't be in a room unless they're married. So like Delaney
and
her mom couldn't stay in the same room.
So then Felicitas and Shaw were trying to explain that's mother and daughter we're talking about, not sister and cousin. And
yeah.
It was no. So it's a money thing. It's always a money thing. We got it figured out and it was fine.
Yeah.
It was fine.
But like that, it gets to a point of overwhelming.
Yeah. Everybody had just gotten there and it was like, well, Shaw was overwhelmed because she had to figure that out like the night before we came because we weren't staying there. So, you know, it was just kind of a point where it's like, oh, goodness.
Yeah, that wave of overwhelm wasn't just you. It was like a tidal wave of people just, I can't take any more of this place. And like, it's day one.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think I could do this. I think we got to go home now.
Okay, start walking. We'll see you there. Like, what are you going to do? But yeah, so that overwhelming, but that's just, that's just normal. You get overwhelmed.
Yeah,
and
totally. Understandable. It just happens. Yeah.
But then like, you know, a day later, it was like, cool.
Yeah.
And like, you just kind of, you watch the team inflate with this sense. You get like purpose and direction. You feel important. You feel like you're doing incredibly useful things. Like you go, like on the way, you're going, is it really that important that I go talk to people?
I know.
And then while you're doing it, you're like, yes, this is so important.
Yeah.
And like, you just kind of, to watch everybody. That's what I love about this is I get to kind of take a step back and I'm watching the team do the work and just watching you guys inflate and it works. And all of a sudden, I can't believe this. This is amazing. And that's just all Holy Spirit goodness.
Jesus, man.
Yeah. Jesus, man. That was 50 minutes.
Wow.
Easier than you thought it was.
Well, yeah, because we had that meeting, but it wasn't like a talking meeting. It was logistics. And so you're the first person I've gotten to like sit down and talk to, honestly. Yeah. I tried to talk to my friends and I just kind of vomited it all. And they were like, don't ever talk to me about that again. I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's so hard.
So, yeah.
Oh, you got it. Yeah. That's another really cool thing is like you get, like there's this band of brotherhood.
It's crazy.
Right? Like we've done this
We're
thing.
We're family now. Yeah. We're like.
Like tight with people that you hardly knew.
Exactly.
I mean, you get so tight in with people that you knew their name. You saw their face. Yeah. You see them in church.
Exactly.
And now it's like, I would take a bullet for that
guy. That's the other reason, like, you build insane relationships going on these things. Not only with your group, but with people on the other side of the world. And
in a day.
In a day!
Why is that? Why can't I find some, like, I can't
find that kind of relationship in high school, because high school relationships suck.
Like, no, they do. They really do.
You know, and the stuff we talk about, we're talking about the grossest stuff that you wouldn't even talk to your dad about.
I know, right? But, and there's like this sense of, you feel like you could do that with everybody in Kenya.
Yeah.
You can snap into these conversations and build a relationship where you're tighter, you're closer to somebody in a day than almost everybody back here. Like that's like my marriage goal relationship level. You know, to be deeply emotionally connected to my wife, they're like, yeah, that's normal. I'm like, oh, okay. The best I can do is what is normal and like baseline in Kenya for getting to know people. Yeah, you just can't get that here.
Uh-uh, not at all, not even close.
That's the thing that they do better. I mean,
they do a lot of things better than us.
They do.
A lot of things.
They do family, food. They do relationships. They do life really well.
They live amazing.
Yeah. They're always present in the moment.
In the moment. That is, they're not materialistic at all.
It's very little materials.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, like you just, genuine is another really good
that
word.
That is true, yeah.
Like, you talk to people, and because they're not, you know, dealing with all the materialistic... I mean, I don't mean a dog in high school kids, but there's a lot of disingenuous stuff.
Oh, no, I totally understand.
Right?
Like, oh, okay, you need to put a tank of gas in a $50,000 car that your parents bought for you? I'm sorry. I'm so sorry for you.
Or you look at people and you know, I kind of had this sense while I was in high school, mm-hmm. but I was one of them. So it's hard to like I kind of identified it more, probably even in myself. I'd be like, this isn't who I really am, mm-hmm. but I feel like I should do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you walk around having been to Kenya constantly going, that this isn't who you really are.
No.
this is fake. And that's why finding people who are really genuine and mm-hmm. and don't put on a show and don't, it's so unique to find here.
I know.
And those are the people I want to get to know.
Yeah.
But back in Kenya, that's everybody.
Everybody.
That's pretty ballin'.
No.
They've got all the genuine.
Yeah, all of it. All the genuine.
Anything else you want to tell people?
I don't know. I feel like I just spit out a lot.
It was a lot of words.
That was a lot of words. Am I Mac McCoy yet? Am I?
Are you what?
Am I Mac McCoy yet?
No. That dude has all the words.
All the words.
Well, like 30 years of radio. He better have all the words, right? That dude's got skills on a mic. I aspire to be so verbose. Yeah. Dude. You went to Kenya.
I did.
You told people about Jesus.
I did.
You made the world a better place.
And I'm still alive.
Yeah. How many bot flies?
Zero.
Zero.
Zero. Flies. Zero bot flies.
Sweet. All right. Yeah. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, no problem.
Got it. Sweet. Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed talking to her, and I hope you realize just how amazing it is that this trip is producing young women like Morgan. Pretty awesome stuff. So keep your ears tuned. More podcasts coming out real soon, but hope you're enjoying these. Leave me some feedback. I'd love to record some more of these and figure out what you guys want to hear. So till then, we'll see you guys soon.